Tonight's topic is holy annoyance, the spiritual benefits of difficult people. So it might be helpful as I go through the talk for you to already have a difficult person in mind so that you kind of have something to refer to. And because you're going to be learning, if you don't know already, a meditation practice on working with difficult people, I recommend not picking an 8 or a 9 or 10 on the scale of difficulty. Just someone, a 4 or a 5. I should really say 1 or 2 because people will often, you know, pick a 9.5 when I say a 5. But if you, it'll go a little easier for you if you pick a 4 or a 5 on the scale. So, in the play No Exit, Jean-Paul Sartre defined hell very simply. He said, hell is other people. heaven is also other people and everything in between. But I thought it would be really interesting to, as part of the series on transforming judgmental mind, to really focus on difficult people and do a practice that is the exact opposite of our normal relationship with the difficult people. And we often feel very entitled and very justified in being very judgmental towards the difficult people in our lives, and we're very attached to our opinions. And likely there's good reason to feel like something's off when you have a conflict with somebody or they're a difficult person for you. But the essence of tonight is separating people from their actions. And we have a choice. So someone did something to you once, and then you've replayed it 112 times. So where's the balance there? It's actually really good news to think of it this way, because we're in control of the 112 somewhat. But we have a lot more control with 112 than we have with the one. Someone does something, and then we keep replaying it and replaying it and replaying it and replaying it. And what we do when we do that is we reduce the person to that little thought. You know, they're so insensitive, or they're so this, or they're so that. And that's all they are. And we just sort of repeat, repeat, repeat. So really, the essence of tonight is to get that our difficulty is with an action. It's bound in time. And our judgment of another person around that is often just not all that relevant to that person at all. We just keep recycling the same thought. And so it's much better when you're really being judgmental of someone else to get that your judgments are not a very accurate representation of them, but they can tell you very much about you. So your judgments of someone else are really information about you and what your needs are. And so that's kind of the essence of tonight. And we're going to do a practice where we wish the person well. And this does not mean condoning the action. We can take totally effective action against an action. But the person behind the action is someone that we can actually relate to. Maybe could we at least just close these ones, and maybe my voice can project out loud enough. Let's just try that. These two here. I really hope the AC will keep us cool. I mean, we won't get the fresh air, but otherwise I'm basically yelling the Dharma, and that just feels like we're at soccer camp or something. Sure, please. Okay, now we're going to do some jumping jacks. Ready? Did the kids just disappear? Or are those like quadruple windows? God, that's amazing. Are they still out there? Oh, well, those are some good windows. Wow. So in our loving kindness practice, we're gonna do a mindfulness meditative adventure tonight of wishing our difficult person well. And we can do this with the full knowledge that we are not giving away our power, becoming doormats, you know, and just condoning harmful activity, and not taking care of our needs. We can actually really take care of our needs. It's actually much easier to work with conflict when you feel friendly with someone, towards somebody. And that's the best we can do. We can be friendly and we can address the specific actions without making any bigger generalizations. And we can be wishing the person well. And if a person, if our wishes really came true, this person probably wouldn't be so unskillful. We want to be careful not to have an agenda with that, but our practice will be more open if we don't have that as an agenda. But it's just we can wish a person well, because if they were truly happy, and they would probably be a lot more aware and sensitive, you know, roughly. So these are the different threads of our evening. We have to really get how we create reality by what we choose to focus on again and again and again. We literally create our enemies with our thoughts. And if we cannot make the person our enemy, but we can get that the action that a person did was really difficult for us, we actually we defeat our enemies by having the enemies just disappear. They're just gone. We actually are creating an enemy when we just think the same limited, very judgmental thought about a person over and over and over. It really, like, clenches our heart. So I've lived in a Buddhist monastery. It was rife with conflict and politics and personality issues. I have very good friends that, you know, on staff at IMS where people meditate a lot. And there's all kinds of personality issues and politics and this is and that. It's not like we meditate, you know, an hour, half hour a day and we suddenly just, you know, get a personality transplant and wake up as the Dalai Lama. I mean, we, you know, it takes a lot of work. He had 14 lifetimes behind him. So people are difficult, we're difficult, and life has conflict, and there's just no way around it. And our practice is not about denying that or thinking that that won't happen. Our practice is very much about getting it that, right, life will be like this. But we can do so much to change our relationship to difficult people and to conflict. There's no getting out of it. And we need to not be idealistic about that. If we're idealistic about it, it's a setup and we'll be expecting something that just can't happen. But we can still have real friendliness and real love and real self-forgiveness for having conflict in our lives with people. We get very judgmental of people, and we can be very judgmental of ourselves, that we're judgmental of people or that we have conflict. And I'm meditating and I'm doing all this work, you know, for inner peace. And if there can't be inner peace, there can't be world peace. And, you know, if I can't get along with my sweetie or my neighbor, how can there be world peace? What's wrong with me? We can get very judgmental about that. And it's just completely not helpful. It just doesn't help. Doesn't help to judge yourself. What helps is to get real friendly with yourself and with all beings. And that's a big part of Buddhist practice, is a lot gets solved when we spend more of our mental energy remembering that we're all basically after the same things. We're all basically after well-being, deep connection, good livelihood, fun. None of us like to get heartbroken. We're all vulnerable to aging and sickness. I mean, every single human being, we have this in common with. And we let all the much more superficial stuff divide us. So we really need to get that we do this when we focus our thoughts so much on judgment and forget the perspective that we're all people. We're all in this together. So there's a cartoon. There's lots of difficulty in this world, lots of difficult people, and I don't know. In this cartoon, the devil and some other demon are talking to each other, and the devil is saying, "For all this talk about innate Buddha nature, business is still humming right along." So, you know, we can have difficulty with our kids, with our partners, with our friends, with our neighbors. I mean, you know, all the positive people in our lives, much less, you know, the really difficult ones. So here's a typical spousal moment. A woman saying to man, he's sitting cross-legged on the floor, "Can you be in the moment later?" Okay, so keep your difficult person in mind. Reflect on what's difficult about them. What do they do that you really have had trouble with? Or what did they maybe keep doing? And get it that it's actions, right? There's something they did or something they do that you have difficulty with. Now see if you can tune in to their humanity. And actually, let me stop. Go ahead and just be as judgmental as you want to be. Like, get that out of the way. And notice in your judgment, is the language about an action or is the language about their personhood? Personhood language is, wow, aren't they selfish? Aren't they insensitive? They're not a loving person, right?
Aren't they judgmental?
Aren't they judgmental, right? You get it? See, in that language, that is a judgmental person. You are defining the person, their entire being, by one trait, right? So our judgments are often very personhood-oriented. And you know, we can keep doing that if we want more enemies in our lives. But if we can change it, change the languaging in your head, you have fewer enemies. Then you just have people who do some unskillful things. And it doesn't mean you're going to want to hang out with them, but it can disarm them in your heart. So why do all this? Well, as I said, first of all, it's just never not going to happen. There are never not going to be difficult people in your life. At least this is what we say in the Buddhist world, so I think it's true. You know, some kind of difficult people in some way. So it's a reality need to rehabilitate our minds, to stop obsessing and jackhammering the same repetitive, judgmental, very narrow thought about a person. Take action that's appropriate, and then cultivate friendliness otherwise. And We get much happier when we do this. So it's a basic reality need to focus on this in this way. So I remember in 2000 when, you know, there was that just horrible process of Bush getting elected, and it just seemed so unfair, and of course all of us liberals think that. But I realized I was so angry about it, but eventually in my practice I realized what I was doing. I was basically taking half of America and demonizing them and just saying, you know, it isn't Bush really even that's the problem. It's just it's that half our country wants him, or slightly less than half. So I'm basically demonizing 100 million people, like half our adult population, and I'm doing it. I can totally disagree with someone's politics and be very respectful towards them as a person and not make them an enemy. And when I realized this, I realized that my heart really was very constricted around my politics and basically demonizing half the world. And it really helped me to just keep saying to myself, these are people too, and they're just like me, and they see it from one way, and I see it from another way, and I have different values, different assumptions, different criteria, different point of view. And let's talk about it, you know, let's have some dialogue, but that doesn't mean a person's bad. But it was a big relief to me to just drop that burden when I realized that that's what I was doing. So it really helps us a lot when we focus this way on the difficult people in our lives. So it disarms our enemies. And then it really helps us a lot when difficult people can be the people in our life who really kind of deepen our bodhisattva ethic. Our ethic to actually really be here, to be of service more and more and more, to sort of be more helpful. And so it's these difficult people that really challenge us to stretch and grow, the ones that push our buttons. So the bodhisattva ideal, it's kind of a funny paradoxical thing where the ideal is to really put others, helping others, you know, of great importance. But that has tremendous benefits for yourself. So this Tibetan teacher, Anam Tubten, in an online talk called Wear the Boots on Your Head, says this. The Buddhist message is very clear. It's to come to this radical realization that your life is not about you. Instead, it's about others. It's about your relatives, your friends, your enemies. It's about humanity. This is truly a radical realization. And then he quotes a very realized female practitioner in the Tibetan historical tradition, Machik Labrun, who said, "Walk aimlessly everywhere and wear your boots as your hat." And he says, she's basically saying, be crazy, be wild. Have the guts to destroy all the worldly logics. Turn success into failure, defeat into triumph, and triumph into defeat. For the ego mind, dedicating your life to others is a defeat, a great loss. So that's why she says, wear your boots as your hat. Turn it upside down. Our orientation is so much about me, me, me. And actually, that doesn't serve us very well. It's actually even better selfishness is to help others, because we feel so happy when we can really be of help. So he recommends to have this as a kind of mantra, My life is not about me. My life is about others. So just sort of sit with that for a little bit. You may notice that there can just be almost a breath of fresh air that comes in when we say that. There's something about being so me-focused that's very anxiety-provoking. There's something about, my life is about others, that sort of drops the me-focus. And you may notice that your anxiety can just lessen a little bit. It's not so much like, how am I doing? But more like, how can I help? How am I doing is a very anxiety-provoking question. How can I help? It just helps us rest. It helps us settle. So Anam Thubten goes on, he says, if you shift your perspective like this, I will tell you that there will be a miracle in your consciousness. There will be a sudden shift in your consciousness. You'll feel like 1,000 eyes suddenly open inside you. You'll feel like Avalokiteshvara, who has 1,000 eyes in the Buddhist teachings. You'll come to see a whole new meaning as well as the holiness of this human existence. And Avalokiteshvara is Bodhisattva of compassion. The Dalai Lama is thought to be an emanation of this Bodhisattva. So if we have this sort of bodhisattva ideal, my life is not about me, my life is about others, then of course we really need to knuckle down and do some work in our hearts with the difficult people in our lives. And one way to have a little more perspective around that is to really see that the difficult people, our teachers, they're our Zen masters, our fierce, maybe, Zen masters. They teach us patience, tolerance, non-judgmentalness, really sitting with your experience and seeing how you get reactive as opposed to connective. The Dalai Lama puts it very boldly. He says, to develop patience, you need someone who willfully hurts you. Such people give us real opportunities to practice tolerance. They test our inner strength in a way that even our guru cannot. That's a pretty strong statement. So there's a lot of benefit to actually confronting the difficult people in our hearts and rehabilitating them in our hearts. And it's good to realize that often our judgments of the difficult people in our lives are really defenses against our own pain. That's another way our judgments are not about them, but about us. Now, obviously, in abusive situations, situations of real harm, actually, I mean, as a therapist, I can say, as a stage, not as an endpoint, but as a stage, if someone has taken in a lot, internalized a lot of negative messages, it can actually be skillful to balance that out with actual judgments of the other person. And that's a stage of reclaiming power, and it's not where I would ever encourage anyone to end up, but it can actually be very helpful at times to take the gloves off and really let your judgments rip as a defense. And but generally, our attachments to our judgments are an unnecessary defense. We do not need to be stuck on our judgments. Well, what we can get, and this is an empowering thing to get, is our problem with difficult people is how we feel in relation to them. It's what gets evoked in us, because again, they do something once and then we do it 112 times in our own minds. That tells you what's going on. Often, a lot of it is our own struggle with our own experience. We can't stand to feel hurt or threatened or scared or thwarted in some way. We can't tolerate our inner experience. And so we protect against that by being very judgmental about the other person. So this is actually really good news, because it's saying, oh, I have to get a lot more mindful. I have to get a lot more aware. I need to sit down with my hurt or my pain or my sadness or my fear and see if I can make friends with this experience. Can I make friends? This isn't, we're just taking the other person out of it. Can I make friends with my own experience? So think of your difficult person and think of what gets elicited in you in relation to them. And now see if you can just allow this mind state, whatever it is, allow it by being curious about it. Notice it. What's it like in this mind state right now? And I do hope you're on a 4 and a 5 and not a 9 or 10. Irritation, frustration, anger, fear, hurt, whatever it is, just let it be. And notice your breath. In the midst of this experience, you're still breathing. And if you're new to Vipassana practice, the way we recommend to work with your emotions is to feel it in your body. That's the least charged aspect of the emotion. The thoughts and images are much more charged. So feel this in your body if you can. Is there a body expression of your mind state right now? Bring the person back in if it's sort of attenuating. And remember something that's difficult for you. And then see what your experience is. And be very friendly towards it. Just allow it. Like, of course, this would be your response. Of course. And feel it in your body. Just be curious and mindful. Know what's happening in your body. So this is part of our path in working with difficult people, is being willing to turn towards the emotions that get elicited in us and make friends with them with our kind attention. If we can do that, it's much easier to deal with the person. A lot of our struggle with other people is we can't stand the way we feel. But if we can stand it and even befriend it, the difficult person becomes easier. And I won't talk about this a lot, but this is the key to a wise relationship with your emotions, your difficult emotions. Accept them more, believe them less. Accept that they're happening, be curious, be kind, and feel them. And So accept that more. Yes, there's fear, there's hurt. But the thoughts, believe them less. Our thoughts are flawed all day long. We don't need to, you know, our thoughts are often useful, but often not. And so believe your thoughts less, but accept your experience more. Accept that, oh, wow, that actually hurt. We can be very judgmental about a feeling like that. But if we can admit the hurt and feel the hurt and actually make friends with the hurt, we feel a lot better. So I'll just read a poem kind of in the spirit of welcoming the difficulty in your heart. It's called The Guest House by Rumi. This being human is a guest house, every morning a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all. Even if they are a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture, still treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whatever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. This is our path. Our Dharma path is waking up to our experience right now, without judgment, welcoming the new arrival, whatever it is. And when we do that, and we really let our difficulty be our sort of goad to awareness, then they are like a guide from beyond. They actually deepen our practice and help us be more free. So I'm going to just stop here for now and just invite any input, questions or comments, responses.
About something you'd said earlier with regard to a difficult person telling us, giving us insight about our own needs. And I'm curious if you could say more about what some of those needs might be. I understand that some of the typical reactions we might have are things like hurt, anger, fear, but example of the person I'm thinking of, I know there's some need or issue that's going on that's mine. Having a little bit of trouble identifying what that could be. So if you could just speak to maybe what are some examples of possible needs, if you will.
And needs are, I'm speaking about needs in you know, really a more universal sense, that the needs we all have. So needs for love, needs for respect, needs for connection, needs for autonomy, needs for, you know, et cetera. So someone does something and I feel they kind of stepped on my toes and my judgment is, wow, you're a really, you know, unaware person, and that's the judgment, and, you know, and do you hear the personhood language in it? But my need is to actually be respected, you know, to actually have someone notice that I'm right here, and I'm speaking metaphorically, you know. So if someone hurts my feelings in an interaction, that might be one of my needs. I believe a person just didn't even acknowledge me or see me or notice me or whatever, and so my need is that. My need is to be seen or respected. And
so maybe you can So in a way, maybe looking at what we're so indignant about, if that's our reaction to how someone has treated us, if we just kind of flip it, it sounds like that's our clue about what our need is. So an example I'm thinking of is, let's say, in my case, someone has been, to the best I can tell, dishonest.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what the motivation is. I don't know if it was intentional. But if I look at that, then the insight for me is that my need is to be treated honestly.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of just is really a flip.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
And you could really sit with that mindfully. My need is to be dealt with honestly, to really feel even what's under that. What does that do for you, right? What if someone is not being honest with you and straightforward with you? What's your experience, you know? And when someone is honest and straightforward, what's your experience? What does that really do for you?
But then, Peter, can you just kind of finish the process, because you recognize it, and then what do you do?
Okay. So my experience in doing this is with somebody.
Do you need to hold it?
Right. So my difficult person is my brother, and I'm living with him temporarily because I just moved back to Colorado, and it's really difficult to be around him because he's a beautiful person, but he has this really fast way of being, and I know that I need my own space in the mornings, my own kitchen. I don't have that. And it just kind of shocks me. And I feel all of this, just aversion and shock and blame. And you're so, your words are telling me how your mouth works. You know, I know there's something wrong with you. But when I go into that feeling of shock, I feel a lot of sadness.
Huh.
Because what I really want, then I have judgment about, well, I shouldn't need my own place, or I should be tougher than this. But I know in some way I'm sensitive and I just need privacy. And then, so there's this sadness, oh my God, I'm not really taking care of myself, and why do I keep doing that? Why do I keep putting myself in situations? And so underneath that is, I'm still looking into that. What is this need that goes under, that's under that sadness of something not being taken care of in me? So that's where I'm at.
And so is your question, thank you, Frank, is your question about, like, so what do you do with that once you
identify it?
You take the action that you can take or are willing to take. And if there's any action you're going to engage another person with, it's in the spirit of request and not demand, right? And it's in the spirit of owning your experience and talking about your experience and being curious about theirs. And owning any interpretation or assumption you're making about them. If that's in you, own it. Like, to even say, I feel disrespected, is like an assumption. The person may not think they're disrespecting you. So, and a person could feel offended by that. Well, no, they might have just simply been unconscious, right? So the languaging needs to be really, I statements, talking about your experience, making requests, and being very curious about their experience. Like, this is what it's like for me. What's it like for you? But it changes. It's a lot. It's really changed to go from my brother is such a speedy, like, to go from that to, oh gosh, I really need a place to live, and I'm sad that I'm, you know, not doing more to activate that. That's very different. That's going to really change how you act towards the person. So we're going to have about 25 minutes or so for practice now. And the loving kindness practice is one where we focus on just basic good wishes for somebody. And I think it'll be easiest if you start with a really easy person in your life, and then that can kind of help condition the atmosphere. And then we'll spend some time with a difficult person. And I'll probably be saying some things during that just as we go. So start by bringing to mind a really easy person in your life just to feel friendly towards. And it's not rational. It doesn't have to be your best friend. It could be a teacher, a benefactor in some way, a child, a pet, a grandparent, just a kindly man you saw today. Just who's coming to mind that it's like, oh yeah, it's pretty easy to just feel friendly towards this being. And the meditation is to hold this person in mind, either an image or felt sense. And you can choose to have that person in front of you or just in your heart. And we'll just go ahead and go into the practice. I will say this just in advance. This isn't about forcing a feeling. This is really a very simple concentration practice. We're going to have phrases that we're going to say, and we're going to have the person. And we can't goose it to make something happen. So it's very important to be really patient with the practice. You're also, especially when you work with a difficult person, going to have story and judgments coming up. And you may actually have some really sort of like, I'm not wearing the thing. I'm sorry. Can you hear me? Okay. Sorry. Hope that's better. Yeah. You actually may have even some difficult emotions come up around the person. So the recommendation is to first just notice that feeling and come back to the phrases and the image of the person. If that emotion really takes over, don't judge. That's just what's happening. That's what this is bringing up. So then you can actually just really be mindful of that feeling. Like I was recently doing this for a difficult person, and actually I was very surprised. I thought this was sort of a mildly difficult person then. But when I started really focusing on them, a lot of anger came up. And I had to really work with the anger for a while just with mindfulness. But once that moved through, then I could go back and do metta for them. And it was actually pretty easy. So first, if some kind of obstacle emotion arises, it's not a problem. This is a purification process. So it's almost designed to bring that up. So just notice it in the periphery, keep going with the phrases and image. But if it keeps coming and coming and makes it hard, then be mindful of the difficult state for a while, a good while. Okay? So I'm going to then just sort of give the rest as we go. How many people have never done metta practice? How many people have done it a lot? Okay. All right, thank you. I just wanted it. It'll affect the way I guide. So I'm going to repeat some phrases, and these are just really basic wishes, and I encourage you to take up these phrases, tweak them a little bit if you want, just sort of play with it. Don't spend a whole lot of time tweaking it, because then you won't be really in the meditation. So thinking of this easy being, holding them as image or felt sense, either in front of you or in your heart. Bring to mind something you like about the person, something you appreciate about them. And if you feel friendly, if there's just any kind of friendly feeling at all, just enjoy that. Notice the friendly feeling and be glad that it's there. It's nice. May you know peace of mind and ease of heart. May you love yourself exactly as you are. May you be free from suffering. May you know true happiness. I'll just repeat them for a while so you can kind of get them in your own mind. May you know peace of mind and ease of heart. May you love yourself just as you are. May you be free from all forms of suffering. May you know true happiness. May you know peace of mind and ease of heart. May you love yourself just as you are. May you be free from all suffering. May you know true happiness. So just repeating these phrases, concentrating on the meaning of the phrases, altering them a little bit if you wish. Repeating them often enough so you can have something to focus on, but not so often that it's mechanical. May you know peace of mind and ease of heart. May you love yourself just as you are. May you be free from all forms of suffering. May you know true happiness. And it's helpful to just every now and then remember what you like about the person without going into big story about it. Just a simple appreciation. If you notice you're getting lost in thoughts, you just note thinking and come back to the phrases, an image or felt sense of the person. And if you would, just let go just for a little bit here, and just in a relaxed, attentive way, notice your breath. Noticing your breath exactly as it is. We want to hold this practice as lightly as if we're noticing our breath. It's easy to over-effort or strain and make something happen. You can't. All you can do is repeat the phrases and hold the person in mind. So now coming back to the metta, may you know peace of mind and ease of heart. May you love yourself just as you are. May you be free from all suffering. May you know true happiness. Repeating the phrases, holding the person in mind with a light touch, not forcing, just being aware, phrase and person. And now I encourage you to set this person aside and bring to mind someone that is some kind of presence of wisdom or compassion in your life, someone that really is some kind of guide or teacher or even a world figure that somehow you admire their spiritual qualities. And it might even just be a dear friend or partner, but somebody that kind of helps you hold friendliness, compassion, bigger perspective. Let them kind of be your helper here. Let their energy just kind of be with you. Picture them nearby. And then bringing to mind the difficult person. Again, a 4 or 5 on the scale. Not someone terribly difficult. Picturing them or having a felt sense of them in front of you. Noticing that your compassion or kindness ally is with you as well, just kind of helping hold an atmosphere of greater spaciousness or compassion. And then see what it's like to send them kind wishes. May you know peace of mind and ease of heart. May you love yourself just as you are. May you be free from all suffering. May you know true happiness. Remembering their humanity, vulnerable to aging, to sickness, vulnerable to hurt feelings, vulnerable to rejection, wanting happiness, ease, well-being, just like you, just tuning into this in them, and keeping the phrases going. May you have peace of mind and ease of heart. May you love yourself just as you are. May you be free from all forms of suffering. May you know true happiness. Judgmental thoughts, just let them come and go. Memories of difficulty, let them come and go. Just keep going with the phrases and tuning into their humanity. You can let go of the judgmental thoughts because you've already thought them plenty. This is an experiment of trying something different. Just see what happens. Longfellow said, if we could read the secret history of our enemies' lives, we would see enough sorrow and difficulty to disarm all hostility. Just tune into some way you might know about this person's suffering in their own life picture maybe their pillow talk with their partner or a dear friend, where they might really just bare their soul, bare their problems. Just tuning in. Undoubtedly, this person is suffering in some way. See if that can help soften you a little bit. And continuing with the phrases. And now letting go of the practice, just doing some simple awareness of your breath. Notice how your breath is right now. May we all meet the conflicts in our lives, the difficult people in our lives, with friendliness and compassion, and take effective action when it's needed. May we all be truly happy. So there's just a wee bit of time to check in. How'd it go? Someone passes. Thank you.
analogy is like two magnets of the same polarity. That's how you're trying to extend those feelings toward this person. You know, it's interesting how that was undulating up and down. You know, at times it felt very difficult. And then I don't know what would transition. It would just suddenly become very easy just to switch it into a shifting viewpoint. But back and forth between those two states.
Thank you. So that's nice because that gives you a glimpse of the potential. If you practice this more, you know, it's possible that the glimpses of, you know, ease with the practice could really grow. I wouldn't guarantee that, but because sometimes some deeper feelings get, you know, provoked. But generally, the trend is when you do this practice more, it starts to flow easier. So, great.
This is something that came up for me before our break. You were talking about the reason this person is difficult is because you're thinking, you personally use this as an example, that person didn't respect me, didn't speak, treat me with respect. And I was wondering if exploring what, you know, one's own feelings are about being treated in that way, would bring up feelings of vulnerability and feelings of insecurity and, you know, things like that. Can you talk about how that works in, like, your own, you know, vulnerability and where the fact that you sort of named this person as difficult is coming from? And I know you talked about it a little bit, but in terms of the practice.
Do you want me to address how to work with your vulnerability?
Yeah,
or
in the practice, you know, like
in the metta, or
yeah.
And so vulnerability is a catch-all word for lots of different things, and when we feel vulnerable, though, often it's hurt feelings or something's wrong with me or shame or embarrassment. So you work with that like any emotion. In the practice, because this really is a concentration practice, if our mind can focus on the phrases in the person over time, friendliness develops. So we acknowledge the emotion without focusing on it too much and come back to the phrases. You know, we can be very, very pinpointed with this. We've had all the poisonous thoughts umpteen times over. We just don't need them, you know. We're trying this as an experiment to see what happens if we focus our mind on their basic humanity, and just to see what happens. So you just let the emotion be in the side. But if it's just too strong, then just work with it like with mindfulness. And it's very different to wake up in the midst of a vulnerable feeling and just be, what's it like to be ashamed, to feel foolish, or, you know, whatever the emotion is, what's it like? And really find it in the body and accept it more, believe it less. You might have judgments about it. That's just a thought. Come back to the feeling in the body. Be willing to sit in the fire if it's that strong of that emotion, and just feel it, befriend it.
Is part of the practice to let go of the name of it, shame?
No, okay. It's skillful to name it. It's skillful to name it because it engages a part of the brain that's not so reactive. So often our emotional reactivity goes down when we have a name for it. To do anything more is just, you know, then gets you off to the races in the story.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I see. Thank you.
Okay, we're at time, so may your week be filled with friendliness. Experiment with it, play with it. It's a great inner adventure to really confront these difficult people in our hearts and work with it and see what happens. See what happens if you do this meditation for a week, and I don't know, it might be really cool. So enjoy, and I'll be here next week, and I hope, assuming we're all here, so we'll see you.